Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. Evening and welcome to The Essentials. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and this evening again we're going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation. Last 2 weeks we spent some time discussing issues around marital rape. We had a wonderful discussion last week with Pastor the name slipped me now. It will come back. But yeah, we had a wonderful discussion with a pastor who had some, you know, ideas which were not in all instances different from my personal views. In one or two areas, we kind of differ. And so, you know, we'll kind of put that down for a bit. The week before, I also dealt with the same thing, but looked at it from a human rights perspective. Interestingly, today I was involved, so to speak, in a bit of a conversation, and there was someone else who proffered that same proposition that, you know, it is really a human right issue in that it creates differences, different treatments between groups of individuals, and of course impacted and individual dignity and also the right for protection under the law. So it was interesting to hear that. Today, though, we are going to talk about some more current stuff. We see in the newspaper today, mask mandate to be lifted on October 1st. And so there are persons who are liking that. I understand that there are aspects of it which might not be sitting well with some persons at this point in time, especially as it relates to students and the need for students to still maintain their mask in class. Government goes high-tech for taxes, 5% up on budget. Satellite images, artificial intelligence applied to boost revenue, explosive growth in new build vacation rental, $560 million collected so far with 48% from customs. So we hear some good things on the revenue side. Basic listed firm pledges qualify audit clear up. So this is benchmark. Obviously, its account has been qualified and they're saying, well, they're going to fix that. Government to relax mandate, says the other newspaper. And of course, AG cautiously optimistic about CFATF re-rating. It would make Bahamas compliant with all 40 Financial Action Task Force AML recommendations. We're looking forward to that. That would be certainly be a feather in the cap of the Bahamas to be compliant with all 40 recommendations. I think at this point in time, we are somewhere around about 38, maybe one or two, which are outstanding. Newest crowdfunding business raises $50,000 only hours after launching on Carnival Cruise. Carnival raises Bahamian flag on new ship sailing in Australia. So, you know, the news these days, I think they have been some good news. Typically, we hear a lot about some of the challenges that is happening. And I think if you read well into some of the matters which are coming out, they're good. Of course, there are always areas of concern. One we saw today, which speaks to persons being challenged in terms of their living circumstances, having to make some serious decision as to, you know, what type of food they're going to buy, reduce the amount of food that they could have purchased in the past. And so these are important issues. They have social implication. They have far-reaching economic implications in the long run, because they affect human capacity. They affect potentially national productivity. And so these are things which must be paid attention to. So we just passed on yesterday the first year anniversary of the Progressive Liberal Party. They won the election on the 21st of September 2021. So yesterday was the exact anniversary, 1 year anniversary. And the question which have been posed, is been posed, and I think will be posed, is how have they done? Have they done well? Have they done not too well? Could they do better? Well, certainly that will always be a natural outlay question from, and I think should be asked in all instances, having determined whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, you know, how better could they have done? Consensus is across the board that, you know, the party has not done badly. It certainly has been able to steer clear of any major sort of scandal. The party still has seemingly a good rating with the public. 70% for the prime minister, 60%+ for the entire rest of the administration or the administration in general. And so those in the context of politics certainly looking at it from a global perspective, are good numbers. We honestly don't know what those may mean in real terms in the Bahamas. We have seen where numbers become extremely misleading, where persons seem to speak in one direction and act in a different direction. I'm not saying that this is the case, but of course we do not have as developed and as matured a polling system, a polling process in the Bahamas as in other places. But it doesn't matter at the end of the day. Any poll which comes north of 50% is always going to be a positive. And so, you know, you have persons who would have delved into that. I see in yesterday's paper, the executive editor of The Guardian, Candy Adams, did an extensive piece on her views as to the performance of the government. It's a good read. I would commend anyone to go check that out. You know, so basically the conclusion was there's still work to be done. There's certainly a lot of positives in avoiding certain things which the previous two administration experienced by that time, some 9 months and some, it was certainly less than 12 months within the first year. And so, you know, to that extent, I think some foundational effort, work has been put into place, and we hope that this augurs well generally for the country, in that if you have an administration which is settled, which is not being consumed by challenges, you know, we call them scandals, but certainly scandals and crises, they're not consumed by those things, then obviously they have greater space, greater comfort they should have in working on their normal plans and bringing those to fruition, working on the issues which are known, looking at the areas which are requiring of important reforms, working through the economic circumstances and seeking to widen and deepen the you know, resilience muscle of the country, because I really believe that you know, from a very, very fundamental perspective, it's not where we are going to, it's not a matter of if we are going to get back to where we were. It seems as if, all the things considered, that the recovery is going to continue to be buoyant over the next 18 to, you know, maybe 24 months, I want to say, but certainly over the next 18 months or so. And that augurs well for the country. The big question which emanates from that, you know, when you look in long term, is the extent to which we can go beyond what was the normative performance. We have in recent times seen numbers which underline the fact that we have an improvement in our revenue line, $2.6 billion, a record in the history of the Bahamas. And that is a good place to be. But it's $200 million beyond where we have ever been in the past. But all things considered, taking into consideration the pandemic, taking into consideration the challenges which the pandemic has helped us to kind of uncover, to peel back the weak underbelly in certain areas of the economy. Taking those into consideration, we must understand and we must appreciate that there is going to be, need to be a lot of work. We have to get fundamentally well beyond where we were. And this is where the whole idea of resiliency comes in. And it's not simply a matter of getting back there and staying. How can we create greater legs, greater wings, greater depth, greater strength in the economic apparatus, in the life of the country, in the various segment of the economy, in agriculture, in financial services, in tourism? How can we do more in fisheries? How can we do better in construction? What type of foreign direct investment can we attract? The nature of the foreign direct investment, are we able to make adjustments to our concession machinery such that the foreign direct investment doesn't in the long run take out of the country much more, well, significant amounts of future taxation? Are we at a place where we are getting a handle on the administrative reforms for our taxation system, our collection, our enforcement, and so on and so forth? So these are things which are going to be very fundamental in sustaining where we want to be in the future. And, you know, if you listen to the Prime Minister, if you listen to officials from the Ministry of Finance, if you read the material coming out of that, you would by now have appreciated that the line has been drawn in the sand very, very clearly, that the trod, the journey is to get to the place where we have revenue of 25% to GDP. And this is necessary. If you read the documents and read between the lines, it is necessary to help the country to grapple with and address the financial and the fiscal circumstances that we are faced with. And so, you know, I would think that regardless of how you look at it, we know that the tourism came back roaring. It would be unfair. It would not be a balanced statement to say, you know, this administration caused that. But obviously, they are doing some things. Revenue came back roaring. It would not be fair to say this administration caused all of that. But you cannot eliminate. You must not. I would think we must not underestimate the impact of some of the policy adjustments. That certainly did help. The reduction in VAT is said to have had an impact. Maybe the removal of the zero-rated items and the exam, that have an impact. We still have some time to go to take a good analysis. We need some timeline experience to get a good assessment as to exactly what drive the uplift. We know in broad terms based on what has been reported, but trends are fundamental. Trends are important when you looking at these type of numbers. And so, you know, but as we speak, you know, I believe that it would be fair to say where we are on September 22, 2022, is a far cry from where we were a year ago in terms of our economic outlook. The challenges, as we would have seen it, as we would have felt it then, looking through the prism of what existed then, things look rougher. And this is not a political statement. It's not a statement in support of the PLP or a statement against the former administration. It was just what it is. At this time last year, we were on certainly some very shaky ground based on what was in front of us. Today, we are on a stronger ground, and we have to be grateful for that. We must give thanks for that. But what we do with this stronger ground going forward is way, way more important. The fact that we are here, good, great. It's important that we got to this point. But where we go from here is, I think, where the bulk of the heavy lifting is going to be. Because from here on in, once we stabilize, once we settle down, focus will have to turn to the big issues of debt reduction. Are we still able to attract borrowing? Will we be forced? Or will we get to the circumstances where we are faced with downgrades? These are important issues that we just can't brush aside, but we have to confront them, and we're confronting them from the point of view that, hey, we want to ensure that any potential negative impact, any potential negative implications associated with these things are identified, are understood, are dealt with such that they never come to fruition. From that perspective, I think it's very, very important that we look at it in that way. And so this evening, what I want to do is, having set the table like that, is to engage in a conversation. Feel free to call in. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and our text line is 422-4796. I just would like to get your views. You know, what have you seen? And, you know, this is not an opportunity to beat up on one administration or celebrate another administration. I'm not really here for that. What I'm interested in is having a conversation with contrast. Yes, we can highlight what was and what is, but very importantly, you know, what the outlook? How do you feel that we are progressing along a trajectory of recovery, which is important? We move in there. But more importantly, setting ourselves up for growth, for serious growth in multiple areas of society, from not just an economic perspective, but also from the social. You know, how are we doing with our physical plant? How are we going to deal with infrastructure in the Family Islands, deal with the airports, deal with airports in the Family Islands? How are we coping with the state of our healthcare system? Has not changed fundamentally since the pandemic started. We've made some improvements. There are some things on the table. Some things have been promised. There's some things that have been worked on. But where are we? Where do we go from here? Because these things ultimately, I think, underline the areas that we have spent maybe the last 2 years or almost 2 years being, you know, clinically focused on. We talk a lot about our vulnerability because the pandemic showed us up. We talk a lot about the level of resilience, which is in the economy, because the pandemic showed that up. We talked a lot about food security because the pandemic showed that up. We talk a lot about how we will look at and address individuals in vulnerable population, persons who are living at the margin, persons who are living at the poverty line, because the pandemic showed that up. We talk a lot about our social infrastructure and maybe how tenuous it is, because that too was exposed, we develop greater appreciation for aspects of our social apparatus which may not be mainstream, the role that social organization, churches, and so on and so forth play. How do we work to ensure that there is a thread, a link running through these things so that if and when the next pandemic comes, if and when the next crisis comes around, we are way, way, way much better prepared to take the hits and move on? Because I read something recently from McKinsey, the consultancy firm, and IMF, one of those IMF organizations, and it was talking about building resilience muscle. And at the end of the day, it's really about how do you develop capacity and competence in various organizations. And for the purpose of this, we can look at organizations from the government itself, the cabinet, the old apparatus of the public sector. We look at individual companies. We can look at that from the perspective of state-owned entities, agencies, which are designed to deliver certain public goods, which are facilitative for the growth and the development of the country. So the idea is that the weaknesses or the challenges that we observe, some of them we knew about, but some things became clearer. We saw where we had greater vulnerability than we would have appreciated up to that point. How exactly are we going to deal with these things such that if and when there is a bump in the road, another obstacle to cross, we're not grappling with the same old things? Maybe some new challenges are come up. You know, for example, if there should be some other type of health outbreak, we should not be overly concerned in the near future. It can be done today, obviously, and I don't think it can be done within the next 6 months. But certainly, if we look in a year, 18 months out, we should not be as concerned as we were going through the pandemic in looking at beds, hospital availability. We should not be concerned about the quality, the state, comparatively, of hospitals and healthcare centers within Grand Bahama and the Family Islands. We should not be as concerned as we were in terms of how we deal with isolating persons, transferring individuals or transporting individuals from the Family Island, ensuring that persons can get medical treatment on a timely basis. These are things which we grappled with. We were faced with some of them challenges. We know them. So the question is, how do we fix them going forward? How do we ensure that we create a stronger underlying infrastructure across all the areas which are important to the country? How do we ensure that we have better systems in place to deal with mental health, to address individuals very quickly who are challenged? How do we imagine how social support looks maybe in a circumstance where there is mass unemployment, not layoffs, but unemployment from or underemployment because businesses have to close their doors? How do we reimagine dealing with those things? And so I believe that where we are today is a settling out. We are in the settling out period. Where we go from here is going to be very, very important. And the steps that we take are going to be major determinants into how strongly we reorganize ourselves as a country, reorganize the infrastructure, the programs, the initiatives, the way the government interacts with the public, with the private sector, the way government deals with building infrastructure, the way government deal with the business of being facilitative to growth and development in all sectors, the way we drive entrepreneurship, create opportunities for employment, the way we deploy our fiscal policies so that there is greater benefit inuring to the public, to the country in the long run, as opposed to the view. I don't know if I don't know if it's an accurate view, but there's a view that, you know, when you facilitate some of these major investments, you know, maybe they walk away with way more than is necessary, and certain of the countries seem to walk away with less than it should have gotten. So these are some of the fundamental things I think we should face up to, start to think about, and get to the place where we can really, really fix them. And so, give me a call. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about these things. And then I'm going to transition in the interim and talk about a very, very important speech given by the governor of the Central Bank of the Bahamas not too long ago, because I think it has some important clues. It has some important admonishments, and it has some important information that we need to pay attention to as we move forward into 2023, and certainly for the administration to be always cognizant of as it moves into its second year at the helm of the country. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to get right into our discussion. We want to look at what the governor of the Central Bank had to say about the state of the Bahamian economy. Don't move. Come right back.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We are having, at least I am having a monologue around issues relating to the economy. As I indicated before, last week we dealt extensively with the marital rape issue, a social issue, a very important issue. The week before, dealt with that too. And so we're making a shift this week. We're kind of getting back to, you know, or maybe our bread and butter. We talk a lot about where the country is. But this speech given by the governor of the Central Bank, and, you know, certainly just like the prime minister and other officials of great importance, when the governor of the Central Bank speaks, you should listen. We must listen, because there's always important information being given. And certainly there's some things that those persons know that we absolutely don't know, or perspectives that they have that we certainly don't have. So he was speaking at the Nassau conference on the 14th of September. And he opened the speech by indicating to the audience that they asked him to provide coverage on the economic outlook, policy consideration, the state of the foreign reserve and structural reforms. So basically, he was there to talk about four, well, at least they asked him to talk about four specific things. Economic outlook, so where are we going to be in the next short while? Policy considerations, what are some of the things that the government and the central bank and all the other organs of government should be doing in the next short while? The state of the foreign reserves, how much money do we have? How much asset do we have in reserve? Is it strong? Is it enough? Is it sufficient? Do we have too much? You know, those are questions, I guess, implicit in the acts. And structural reforms. What are some of the things which are out there in our economic arrangements which needs to be fixed, which needs to be changed, which needs to be enhanced, which maybe need to be see some level of liberalization, ways we can move to create a better way of ease of doing business. So these are the things that he was asked to do. And he pointed out that these are all interrelated issues, and he wanted to cover them in a very constructive way, discussion on the economy. One of the things he said very, very early up front that as regard the policy consideration, he would limit what he said about those policy considerations to the things where the central bank contributes. So basically, the governor was kind of excusing himself and saying, look, you know, there are some things which the central government is responsible for, and I'm not really going to talk about those things. But where there are policy considerations which involve the central bank, then certainly I will give you an insight into that. I raise that because I'm going to draw something to your attention, because I believe that though the governor said this, the overall effect of the speech was not consistent with that statement. And I'll explain to you why. He gave an overview, basically, of where the country is. And these are some of the things that we just talked about, that the, you know, we knew that there was COVID, the Bahamas experienced significant amount of unemployment. Persons were highly dependent on government for, to just get by. The Bahamas had to go out and borrow a significant amount of foreign exchange in order to keep its reserve going. And I think this is one of the areas which is important, because it's a clarifying statement, something which I think has been said widely by many if you will, an accusation on the previous administration that, you know, they borrowed too much money, too much foreign currency, while locally there would have been a significant amount of excess liquidity. Why didn't they borrow in the domestic market? And in this speech, the governor clearly stated out and clearly clarified that the foreign exchange borrowings which took place then were necessary. They were needed. Instinctively, depending on what your philosophy is and the extent to which you wish to be or choose to be objective, if you think about it in this way, the main source of foreign exchange for the country is tourism. And at the time, in the midst of the pandemic, tourism basically shut down to zero. It therefore follows that the source of foreign inflows would have been shut off. And consequently, in order to shore up, secure the peg, you would have to find money, but you have to find this money in foreign currency. And so I think this is an important point of a clarification, at least for some persons. Lot of us who follow these type of things and are non-aligned, we kind of fully understood that that was what happened. Now, you know, you may argue, was it a little bit too much? But the fact of the matter is that foreign currency borrowing was necessary. We he went on to outline some of the issues which were impacting tourism, as we said. But it's important to kind of isolate one of the points that he made as it relates to tourism and kind of, you know, overall the country in a way. In that right now we are seeing a big bounce. As he put it here, the best numbers recorded pre-pandemic were in the months of January to August 2019 and September to December 2018. So those were the periods where we saw the most robust performance in terms of tourism. And then in 2019, we got hit with Dorian, which took out a big chunk of the economy. So, you know, 2019 was a great year, but still, it could have been much better had we not had the disruption by Dorian. But then he uses that as the foundation to go on to saying this, that the seasonal rebound in stopover tourism is expected to be concluded at some point in 2023. So the uptick that we're seeing now, according to the governor, the big rushback that we're seeing per the governor's statement, sometime in 2023, next year, that is going to start leveling out. And as I said when I was talking earlier before getting into the speech, these are some of the important things which we need to pay attention to, because we have to take these away. We have to bear these in mind because they hold sway for where we are going to be at the end of 2023 and into 2024. So right now we are on the rise. 2023 is likely going to be leveling out. As the governor puts it, that the growth that we're seeing is likely to show above average for 2021, last year certainly, 2022, and to an important extent in 2023. What is a point of caution for me is that he stated very clearly that going into 2024, this momentum is expected to end. So once we get through this year and we get through the next year, that's why I mentioned maybe the next 18 months or so are going to be so, so important. The work to be done, the heavy lifting to be done over this period of time will determine what happens after 2024. Because here is what the governor says. The momentum is expected to end, and the Bahamas could again face potential GDP growth that is still below 2% per annum. Now, if you follow these issues, if you pay attention to what has happened to the Bahamas over the last decade, maybe a decade and a half, two, it is this, that on average, our GDP growth has been below or at 2%. In the moments, or in the years, not moments, but in the years when we have done better than normal is when we have gotten to 2%, or just about there. But under normal circumstances, and if you map it out and average it out on a graph, you will see that we are running below or at 1%. This is very, very, very important for those who are planning and managing the economy. Because the type of a robust comeback is in many ways a filling of the gap created by the impact of Dorian, even though that is not going to be totally filled until we get Abaco and Grand Bahama back up and churning. But certainly a big part of this is the gap created by the pandemic. And that is going to be filled. We know we experienced 6% or 8% growth because that's a rollback, having lost 14%. But to appreciate that in 2024, we may revert we're likely to revert to below 2% average growth tells you that there is work to be done. Whatsoever it is at this point which drives us to that at or below 2% growth has to be changed, has to be improved, has to have to get better, must. Otherwise, we are going to get back to a place where we are meandering as we were before, with an important difference in that this time our debt obligation, our national debt, is significantly larger than it was then. Because as the governor pointed out, that one of the legacy of this pandemic is significantly increased debt obligations, national debt. So if we're paying attention and if we're going to be planning and thinking about where we're going from here on in, we have to bear that in mind. He goes on to point out that, look, you know, we have to now start to look to international financial services as part of the apparatus for growth. This growth that is required also must focus our attention on tourism. He says it also keeps tourism in the spotlight, in that we have to go about maintaining the attraction of investments so that we can improve our stopover plans. So basically, we need more rooms, more beds. We need more facilities for those persons who come as tourists and stay. More rooms. I think the Deputy Prime Minister and Minister for Tourism has said that. We need more beds. We need more rooms. The stock of rooms in the Bahamas need to improve numerically. So the governor is pointing out that, yes, we are at a good place at the moment. We're seeing a rushing back of the tourism tourism market, the segment of the economy. That's going well. But it's likely to rush back to its normal level. And if we're going to affect that dynamic, if we're going to create a circumstance where that is improved, then we have to pay some attention to financial services, pay some attention to the type of investments that we are attracting, which is going to improve and expand the stopover plant, certainly over the medium term. So we hear ongoing discussion about improving airlift, making trips to different markets to attract them. Obviously, those have to go hand in hand with expansion of the plant. And this is what the governor is bringing to the fore. He then goes on to, I think, a little bit of a caution, a caution, that beyond the rebound, tourism is likely to be more constrained by headwinds from elevated oil prices and countermeasures at major foreign central banks to fight off inflation. What is he saying here? That in our markets, in the United States or wherever the people come from, and certainly here too, we know it, but they are grappling with the vagaries of high inflation. And high inflation takes out spending power, spending capacity. Tourism and travel and leisure is, generally speaking, a discretionary spend. So inflation will have and can have an impact on that. Added to that, because of the high inflationary environment that those countries are experiencing, and the desire of the authorities to tame that inflation, they're currently in the business of aggressively increasing their interest rate. Just today, the Fed, I think, went up by 75 basis points. And we hear of other developed economies around the world which are following suit. So that is saying to us, basically, that it is now getting more expensive for persons to borrow, because the whole objective of increasing your interest rate is to stymie demand, to reduce consumption. And then as a result of reducing demand, that will help to pull inflation back to ground. The flip side of that is that if you pull too hard, if you get it wrong, you push the world into a global recession, which is kind of one of the things which a lot of persons are really concerned about. A little bit schizophrenic here. We don't know if we're going or coming, that sort of thing. But at this point in time, there's no recession. But the governor is rightly saying that, look, we need to be mindful that these headwinds are there, and they're likely to affect our greatest earner, which is tourism. So as we think about going forward, as we think about our future, as we think about our planning, we have to bear that in mind. We have to get to the place where we start to understand that this is not going to be a straight walk back to a place and then it's going to be hunky-dory. The place wasn't hunky-dory in the first instance. We have new headwinds to contend with. We have changed circumstances to contend with. And so these should fit into or be pulled into the consideration of policymakers as they go about their business. He then turned to public sector or public finance. And he talked about the fact that the economy rebound is already having some significant impacts on effects on improving what we currently have. We talked about that right at the top of the show. So with revenue recovery, we see a shrinking in the deficit, and we see also that government, he's saying that the government is fine-tuning its consolidation strategy. Therefore, you know, based on what's happening, the government is making sure that it can squeeze out as much as possible. You would see in the newspaper today, they talk about 5.6% or 5% increase in taxes, you know, up on budget. So these are things which he is pointing to, that the government is continuously tinkering with and working to get us to a better place. He then turned to the fact that, look, you know, maybe a concern of him is that persons, maybe like myself, I don't think I do this, but he's of the view that analysis on the debt burden has been exaggerated. And it has been exaggerated because of a lack of understanding, or at least not being balanced enough to bear in mind the impact of Dorian and the fact that we temporarily lost portions of our economy and so on and so forth. I am not sure how exaggerated the discussion has been. What he has conceded, though, is that the more normalized position for our debt circumstances going forward is going to be in the high 80s. Now, I don't know how you see it, but that's high. It's certainly not the 100 and plus it was at some point in time, but 88 or 80 plus is high, and we want to see that reduced. The function of reducing that is two parts. We either get to the place where we have the ability to pay down the debt, or we grow the economy. So as more of the economy becomes the portions which we have lost or which are currently on the slow, so Abaco and so on, the more we can get those areas back up and percolating, the better off we are going to be as a country. It's very important that, you know, Abaco is a significant portion of the productive economy of the country. And so we need to get that back. So, you know, with that rushing in, certainly you may see an expansion of the base. But the amber light for this is what I mentioned earlier, the fact that the governor with his resources from the central bank, anticipates that we could go back to a normalized below 2% growth. And that doesn't augur well for any type of a mathematical change in the debt to GDP. What I mean by that, it doesn't suggest that the GDP is going to grow sufficient enough to make a marked change in the ratio. So if suddenly overnight our GDP was $20 million, and I think our debt is somewhere around 10, 11, so it would just be about 50%. So we would drop down to 50%, which is the target in 10 years, at least the target set in the strategy up to 2031. So these are important matters which the minister, the governor is pointing out, and we have to take these into consideration. Because as he rightly says at the end of this particular statement that he was making, which he says, the more normalized debt to GDP ratio for direct charge central government obligation is in the high 80%. And then he goes on to conclude that by saying that the national debt, which is the largest stock, and the public sector total, which is the largest, all will show similar trends. So all of those, no matter which measure you use, central, public sector, all will show similar trend in that they're going to be higher somewhere in the 80s region there. And all of them, he says, have implications for public financial management reform. All have implications for public financial management reform. Now, that could mean any number of things. It could mean the government have to increase taxes. It could mean that the government has to slash expenditure in certain areas. It could mean that the government have to raise fees and charges for certain services in other areas. It could mean that the government is going to shift the way it deals with its enforcement of taxation and payments and taking people to courts and so on and so forth. But all of these things all serious implication for reform. Now, why am I outlining this? I'm doing this to say that as we look at the better place that we are today, we have to be mindful and balanced to look forward in a very sober, honest, and objective fashion at the potential challenges that we have down the road. Because by identifying and understanding and working to fix those, we're going to make the path clearer. If we do nothing about them, if the implications which the governor speaks to, the financial, public financial management reforms, if those aren't addressed, then 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, whatsoever the debilitating potency of those are, we're going to feel it. And so we have to not just celebrate in the moment, and if there's cause to be just for celebrate, then we certainly should. But we have to be sober. We have to be objective. We have to be rational in our forward-looking strategies. And we need to make sure that the strategies are complete and comprehensive in that they take into consideration the true realities on the ground. And fix those, grapple with those, deal with those in order to create a clearer path, because the path will never, ever be totally clear. There's something else coming down the pipe. There's always going to be a challenge. Not enough money, too much money, not enough taxes, too little taxes. There's always going to be something which is off kilter. So the economy, the governor says that growing the economy faster is an option that can be embraced as necessary to help ease the debt burden. That's kind of why I just explained. You grow the economy, your debt to GDP ratio comes down. public-private partnership and privatization framework, which can have a direct impact on the burden sharing, such that you know, the government don't have to always be coming up with the funding, are a vital way of providing public service goods, infrastructure. So these are all part and part of the strategies which can be employed. However, he says, and these are his exact words, however, there is also a sense of urgency to hands-on fiscal consolidation, which has to be understood in the mix of policy around which consensus is built on taxation, tax administration, and expenditure controls. So basically he's saying, look, some of the things which the government is doing, some of the things which we are looking at achieving, these are positive, good things. However, bear in mind that when you say hands-on, urgency to hands-on fiscal. So urgency to hands-on fiscal, I am interpreting that to mean that, look, you know, very quickly we need to roll up our sleeves and deal with these issues of taxation, tax administration, and expenditure controls. We need more taxes. We need to manage the taxes better. That's what the tax administration is, or more efficiently, more effectively. And we need to rationalize our expenditure. It's the governor saying that. Now, I pointed out to you earlier that the governor said at the top of his speech that he was asked about four things, and he's going to deal with those four things. But as it regards to one, the policy position, he's going to limit what he says to the central bank, really. This is where I believe that the speech didn't actually meet or kept that standard, because while he did not speak to these things absolutely directly or directly in absolute terms, he was poking at them all through the speech. And I'll highlight a couple of more to you. He was poking at these all through the speech. And so this speech to me was not simply a speech to the individual sitting before him at the Nassau conference. But it was a broader conversation which encompasses policymakers. It was also designed so that persons would understand as they go back to their various places of business what some of the risks are, what are some of the headwinds, what the economic landscape looks like, or could look like, or may look like, depending on whether there is action or inaction in certain regards. So if you have never met the speech, I would encourage you to take it and, you know, give it a slow read. I think it's very, very, very interesting. The governor then pointed out something which I think is important, and this was one of the areas which created headline, when he said that in terms of our public finance, he wanted to emphasize a couple of things. First and foremost, the Bahamas is not in a sovereign debt distress. So he basically said, you know, from time to time, you will hear persons like myself. I always seek to underline the fact that I don't believe that the Bahamas is at a place where it's in distress or will have any relationship with the IMF. I always try to do that because I think it's important. But these conversations come up all the time in different eras. And he believes that commentators, analysts, economists here and abroad are misdiagnosing the facts very clearly. And I think he is very convicted to that position. And I support his position for the points that he outlined. He says, look here, the Bahamas is not in a place where we will have to default on our debt or have any type of, restructuring. Yeah, that's not on the cards. And you may step back and you ask yourself, you know, but why would he say that we owe a lot of debt, right? Well, here is why he says that. And I fully agree. He says the sovereign, which is the government, has the capacity to undertake whatever financial measures are needed to continue to meet its debt obligations. So the government have the capacity to do a lot of things, because he says whatever financial measure to meet its debt obligation. And then he goes on to say, and taxpayers, you and I, have the capacity to shoulder such measures if the extreme becomes necessary. Now, notice he didn't say, you and I have the ability to pay more taxes, but that's exactly what he's saying. The governor of the central bank of the Bahamas is saying to you and I as citizens and residents that from where they sit, from all the assessment, from all the analysis, from all the things that they know, from all the comparative studies comparing the debt burden of the Bahamas or the tax burden of the Bahamas with other jurisdiction, like jurisdiction, bigger jurisdiction, taxpayers in the Bahamas have greater capacity to pay more taxes. That's the bottom line. And because of that bottom line, there is absolutely no way on this side of consciousness that the Bahamas debt is going to be in a distress circumstance. Now, there are some important things to take away from that. I think it was important for the governor to say it, but there's also some important things to take away from it. The governor did not say that we are going to grow significantly and that is going to solve our problems. He did not say we are at this point in time satisfied with what the debt management strategy is, and as a result of that, we're going to be fine. He could have said that. He's not supposed to speak to those things, and this is why he gave the caution up front. But he didn't say that based on the research and the discussions he have had with high officials at the IMF and persons from all around the world, you know, we are not going to go into a recession and things are going to be hunky-dory and the war is going to stop in Ukraine and we are going to have significantly more revenue because the trajectory that we are seeing, which took us to $2.6 billion, is going to continue. We may even get to $3 billion. And as a result of that, we'll be able to pay down the debt. Didn't say any of those things. He simply said, the debt will not be distressed because if push come to shove, you and I will be asked to pay more taxes in order to pay the debt and meet the obligations. That is, I think, an accurate and honest analysis. But it also points to the tenuousness, the kind of danger, the place that we are. And obviously the hope is that it will never come to that. But if it did, we're good. Still, we're good. And he wanted to underline that because that is an important statement to get from a governor. The second point he wanted to highlight is that the sovereign has capacity in the near term to borrow more money locally in the domestic market. And why is it that the sovereign has the capacity to do this at this moment in time? Because as a result of the borrowings which took place prior under the Minsk administration, the country is now at historical levels of reserves. And as a result of that, right here, right now, we do not necessarily have to worry too much about foreign currency reserve. We don't need to worry about the need to stabilize or shore up the reserve. So the government can shift its strategy or shift its focus from seeking to borrow in the foreign market and borrow locally. And that is important. It's absolutely and fundamentally and critically important, because the government is, the country is at this moment challenged in doing exactly that, borrowing in the foreign market. So the extent to which we can shift focus into our domestic market and find the funding to keep the engines and the gears of government turning, to fund the deficit, that is going to be a beautiful thing. It does a number of things. Because the extent to which we borrow locally, my words, we are kind of opening the spigot and taking off some of the pressure, letting off some of the pressure in our debt circumstance. The moment we start to improve the proportion, no matter how small it is at this point in time, we can improve the proportion of domestic debt to foreign debt, the country is in a better state. So I think going into 2023, the requirement is about $1.8 billion. That's the borrowing requirement. If we can secure all that, well, not all of that, because I think we may have gotten some already. No, it can't be, because 2022 just finished. But if we can secure most of that in the domestic currency for this entire fiscal, that is going to augur well for us from a debt strategy management perspective. And it's just going to be a good thing. Simply a good thing. Because if you look at it through the lens of distress, debt is always significantly harder to be seen as distress when it's in the national currency. It just don't happen. Because even in the worst case of a devaluation, it's just still the local currency. So those things are not seen in the same light. It is always the foreign component which creates a problem, because you have to go out and earn foreign currency in order to pay those debt off. You know, for the local debt, it's just local currency. You earn local currency, you pay it off. Pretty much easier than selling abroad, because in order to sell stuff abroad and earn foreign currency, you have to either have persons coming in and buy directly, or you have to have excess capacity which you're exporting in order to do that. You don't have to be excess, but you have to be exporting, because you know we could not sell you and sell it abroad and use the money anyway. So these are, I think, important takeaways. There is excess liquidity in the system. Seemingly, the commercial banks locally have a preference for short-term component, which is a little bit concerning, because with the excess liquidity, not necessarily lending long-term. We have seen where banks' balance sheet has grown with government debt, and private debt is kind of taking a playing second fiddle to that. That doesn't augur well for growth. That falls in line with us going back to this 2% or below 2%. So certainly we want to see private debt. Private debt needs to increase. So banks need to start to lend to entrepreneurs and so on and so forth. That needs to be more robust. Now, the point I made to you earlier, that if the banks suddenly have this opportunity to lend $1+ billion to the government, they are going to do that because it's a safer credit risk. And that has the potential to crowd out private debt, private credit. So we are kind of walking in many ways on a knife edge here in many regards. And that is why I believe that this particular speech is so sobering. It's not just something you read or listen to and just throw by the wayside. You need to spend some time you need to spend some time delving into this, because there's some serious, fundamental, indicative information being provided here that we just need to come to grips with. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to continue to get into the governor's speech. Hopefully, I can get you through to the end of this without having to go back to it. But you listen to The Essentials, The Reset. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and we're having a walk through the speech given by the governor of the central bank, Mr. John Roth, at the Nassau conference on September 14, 2022. Don't move. Come right back.
Are back again at Margaritaville,
downtown Nassau,
for the fourth installment of Fish Fry Friday. With music by DJ AI and Visage.
It's the party everyone's talking about.
Friday, September 30th. Party kicks off at 6:30 p.m. at the 12-volt bar, Margaritaville, downtown Nassau. $25 cover charge with one free drink with entry. And experience the Fish Fry Friday buffet at the Vacation Cafe before the event for only $55 and enjoy complimentary party access. Park safe and secure for only $10 all night.
Parking ticket to be validated at entry.
It's the biggest and best party the last Friday of every month. So don't miss it this month, Friday, September 30th. Fish Fry Fridays.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and we're having a walk through the speech given by the governor of the central bank, Mr. John Roth. We are trying to eke out important underpinnings of the speech, looking at suggestions which wasn't suggested, and just providing some perspectives on what is there. One of the points which the governor did mention as it relates to local debt is that the central bank will be working with government to extend the maturity of domestic debt, so make it longer. So basically, when you're dealing with debt, you have one or two things. You either borrow short term or you borrow long term. If you borrow long term, then chances are you spreading out your risk. I don't know how the current portfolio look, but seemingly, the government and the central banks are certainly with the advice of the central bank. He's not satisfied with the portfolio. Maybe it's too short term. So they want to kick it out further down the road, which means that the time for repayment will be well structured, so you don't have multiple tranches of bonds coming due within a close proximity. So those are good things to be done. The country, or through the central bank, the government is working on a saving bond so that smaller investors, retail investors, can buy government debt. This is a good thing. So as investors out there, you know, get ready. You'll have an opportunity to participate more actively at the lower level. Then he says, third, whether perceived or actual, these factors affect sovereign credit profile of the government. Whether perceived or actual, those factors that affect the sovereign credit profile of the government have to be strengthened. Here again is one of the areas where I used to point to the fact that the governor said, well, you know, I wasn't going to speak to that, but he's actually doing so. He's saying that it doesn't matter what we feel about our debt circumstance today. Whether we believe it's real, whether we believe that the public or the lending public is believing us or not, whether we believe that they're not hearing our story, whether it is a communication problem, real or perceived, those factors which affect credit risk or credit profile of the government have to be strengthened. This would help to expand the investor base and give the government more leverage on interest rate cuts. So basically, the governor is saying, look, there's some things which is causing us to be where we are now, and people want to lend us at high interest rates. You have to fix that. And you have to fix that so that other persons going to be interested in taking up your instrument. And as a result of that, because the demand is higher, the rate is going to come down. Simple. Not as simple to fix as that, but that's the simple understanding. And so here it is again, where the only way we can achieve that is if the in the governor's mind, he's saying that, look, you have some reforms, some things you need to change, some things you need to fix, and you have to go fix them. Because it can't be that, hey, we just going to tell a different story. That's not what he's speaking to. He's saying that those factors that affect the sovereign credit profile of the government have to be strengthened. The government needs to say to the world, we can pay our debt. Here is our growth. Expenditure is trending down. Income is trending, revenue is trending up. We have that investment in the pipeline. That investment is coming on in 2023, 2024, so on and so forth. These are the things which are going to change the credit profile. We are running a budget which is trending, tending towards being balanced, which is what the government planned to do. These things have to be changed. The governor said so, not me. In his speech, you can download it from the central bank's website and you can read through it. He then turned to tax reform, and he says that the discourse on tax reform has started to narrow on corporate income taxes. So basically, we have talked about a lot of things, and you know, the focus now is coming down to corporate income tax, and that is basically around this idea of meeting this global minimum taxation. That has become a big driver. But then he goes on to say that this conversation, he said, however, this conversation ought to appreciate that taxation matter, that taxation will matter most for the domestic side of the economy. Remember, there is this discussion. There was the 15% minimum tax. And, you know, there is an aversion in the Bahamas for income tax, personal income tax, corporation tax. And the government did kind of indicate, look, you know, we will take a good look at this international minimum corporation tax because we have to think about the reputation of the jurisdiction, so on and so forth. Here the governor is saying that, yes, while that is good and well, the conversation ought to appreciate that taxation will matter most for the domestic side of the economy. How it adds any buoyancy to the tax base potentially improves total yield and in a progressive way potentially shift more of the tax burden to those of greater financial means. Now, those are a lot of words. They smart speak. But when someone says to you, speaking about taxation, shift the burden to those of greater financial means, is simply saying that we need a more progressive tax system. We should look at taxation which is more progressive. Whether you're going to tinker with the regressive system that you currently have, or you're going to usher in a type of a taxation regime which is naturally more progressive, like income tax and corporation tax. So even if it were done in a fashion that does not boost the total revenue intake, tax reform could have other benefits, provided that it was administratively as efficient as existing systems within the government. So if the government can implement some other form of taxes and it didn't become revenue positive or huge amount of, you know, a watershed moment. But as long as we can collect that as efficiently as we do value-added tax, it would be significant for the country, says the governor. Now, none of these words you will see in the speech, but I believe that exactly what he's saying or something to that effect. So ideally, though, the governor says, reform should be driven by self-interested positive motives rather than out of panic, fear, or coercion. So basically, them people oversaw, them foreign people who saying you need to do this, and do that, don't listen to them. Don't totally ignore them. But we can't just listen to them. We have to make the moves. We have to do the things. We have to make the changes which are going to be in the best interest of the Bahamas. It needs to be done by self-interested or driven by self-interested positive motives rather than out of panic, fear, or coercion. We should also expect that any discussion on corporate income taxes would not be complete without also tackling the subject of personal income taxes. I said to you earlier that the governor said he was going to restrain himself from speaking to certain issues. But here he is clearly outlining. He said, look, you cannot have a conversation around corporate income tax without talking about personal income tax. Now, this is for you listening out there in the public. You, the individuals who are scared to death of taxation or income tax. It is saying that if the government moves on this 15% minimum corporation tax, from the perspective of the governor, they're having an incomplete conversation, an incomplete discussion as it relates to taxation, because it cannot be balanced. It cannot be complete until you look at personal income tax. You cannot get a complete equation if you're only focusing on the international element for corporation tax. You have to know that taxation is about the domestic operation of the economy. We have to bear that in mind. So he makes some very powerful statements, really, really powerful statements. He goes on to talk about the financial sector and how there can be some boosts as a result of domicile digital asset service, so the FTX and the other aspect of that which is creeping into the financial services. So, you know, we see that. So we have a situation where he is highlighting important issues which are going to affect us going forward. Talks about the Bureau, where the Credit Bureau, where that is now fully operational, and it's expected to incorporate non-banks, non-bank entities. So, you know, you still getting credit from the furniture store around the corner and that and so on. Those are going to be incorporated. That is going to be a good day for persons, especially those who manage their credit well. You're going to get better rates. And the persons who don't, you're going to pay. So it's important development which is coming down the pipe. The central bank is also working to ensure better delivery channels for digital delivery of financial services. And the central bank is also working to ramp up its effort as it relates to the sand dollar and I think that digital part. So he then goes on to say, and we kind of running out of time, but he then goes on to say that inflation rate in the Bahamas is unlikely to peak. The inflation rate is unlikely to have peaked yet for the Bahamas, though it's expected to closely track the pattern experienced by the United States. So we have to bear that in mind, too, that prices are going to continue to get higher. Downside risk to protracted high inflation is that the interest rate policy being pursued will erode American and other consumers' ability to afford to travel. Today, it went up by 75 basis points. He also pointed out that, look, if interest rates keep going up, then people can basically take their money and go invest it elsewhere. And they may decide, well, we're not going to invest in the Bahamas because, you know, we can get better returns. Or alternatively, they're going to put greater pressure on the Bahamas to give greater concessions, yeah? In order to compensate for the opportunity cost that they're giving up. And so as a result of that, that additional thing that they're asking for could put our revenue circumstances, maybe not immediately, but certainly in the midterm, under some pressure. So he's pointing that out to certainly must be policymakers. He said also the directly elevated cost of international capital in rising interest rates has to be seen as a drag on the Bahamas' ability to attract foreign direct investment and as putting more pressure on the Bahamas to make the returns to foreign investment more attractive. How are we going to sweeten the pot so that they come? That's basically what he's saying. So beyond the bounce back period for tourism, the headwinds for the sector could be significant, he said, if energy costs remain an issue after 2023, or if it becomes a more serious issue in the near term. We talk about foreign currency and the fact that we are at historical levels, and so we are good to go from the foreign exchange perspective. We also pointed out the fact that those monies were necessary in order to secure the reserves. So then he goes on to conclude, and I want to read for you the entire conclusion. Not too long, don't need much commentary. So he says, in conclusion, the Bahamian economy is exhibiting a strong rebound from COVID-19, largely to the benefit of tourism or largely due to the benefit of tourism and real estate investment, largely to the benefit of tourism and real estate investment. We understand that. We see that there's a strong rebound. Beyond the COVID-19 rebound, there are still significant downside risks to the economy that must continue to be managed, including any residual health sector vulnerabilities. So we still have to figure out, you know, what's happening in the health sector, including trying to figure out whether we have enough beds, whether we have enough infrastructure, whether we have enough human assets in these apparatus. Once the COVID rebound is complete, the growth outlook is expected to reduce back into line with the Bahamas' medium and longer term potential. That line troubles me a bit. The governor didn't say it's going to go back in line with the longer term experience. He said it's going to reduce back into line with the medium and longer term potential. It's my reading now. Potential versus experience make a hell of a difference. What I am gleaning from that is, having regard for all the things as they currently exist, there is a projected or an extrapolated potential for the Bahamas. Those things left unchanged, this is the level the Bahamas will operate at. And so, without those happening, he's saying that we're going to get back in line with that. Hence, he goes on to say, the policy challenge is to improve the medium-term growth potential. You see what I'm saying? The potential is at this level. And the challenge that we face now is to improve that. Because if we don't, we're just going to simply fall right back in line with where that is. The central bank's role in this process is to work with all stakeholders to increase the efficiency of banking and payment system, promote better outcomes for financial inclusion, and support increased prospects for growth in international financial services. In addition, we have a continued role to play in supporting the improvements in system of public debt management and stability of the domestic financial system, to which there is a strong connection to the adequacy of foreign reserves and maintaining the Bahamian dollar fixed exchange rate. Full stop. That's the end of the speech. So I believe, ladies and gentlemen, that you should get a copy of this speech and you should read through it carefully. Because in my heart of heart, there is so much to be unfolded, unpacked in this particular speech. It's not something to shake a stick at. It's really, really some powerful highlights of some of the things that we already know, we already appreciate, but putting them in real, honest, objective perspective. It's basically saying, we're going good. There's some things that we have to do. If we don't do these things, we are going to hit our heads against the potential ceiling that we currently have. And the challenge, the task, therefore, is to extend that ceiling. You have been listening to The Essentials. I am your host, Hubert Edwards. We always end by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. The only thing then they're left to do is to say, be good, walk good, take care of yourself. One love and Ubuntu.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.